You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back here today. It is our midweek edition of Locked On Ravens here on Wednesday. And unfortunately, Cole Jackson is not here with us to digest that Ravens at Titans victory in the wild card round and get into the mailbag questions we have today. Something very, very last minute came up with him. So unfortunately, no Cole Jackson today, but the show goes on. I will be here. I will be answering those questions. And we'll be getting into the Ravens injury report. Well, the Ravens and the Bills injury report here in this first segment. A classical Ravens news notes and quotes segment. With the Ravens playing on Saturday, teams begin to practice a little earlier in the week. It's not a regular work week for these teams, for the Ravens, for the Bills, just because their week is moved a day up. Instead of playing on Sunday, they play on Saturday. So instead of the first injury report coming out on Wednesday, the first injury report comes out on Tuesday, which was yesterday. So getting into that injury report here and talking about how healthy the Ravens are right now. And that's really, it's a weird concept, right? The Ravens being healthy. It's been such a injury-riddled season for this Baltimore Ravens team, whether it be season-ending injuries, injuries that keep guys out multiple weeks, lingering day-to-day things. And look, that's the NFL. It's not necessarily an excuse, but it certainly has affected the way Baltimore has wanted to play football this season. So we'll get into the Ravens injury report. We'll get into the Bills injury report as well. Talk about some transactions that the team made and dive into that. And then in the second and third segments, we'll be answering mailbag questions here on the show. Now, I do notice that there are a couple more comments than there are questions on my Twitter feed, or at least on my tweet, what I can see. And I think that's because there might be people asking questions whose accounts on Twitter, at least, are on private. So unfortunately, if I don't follow those accounts, I can't see the questions. So I don't want anybody to think I'm ignoring them or I don't want to answer their questions. I will answer anything on this show, or all right, pretty much anything, but there's a matter of me actually seeing it, which if I don't see it, unfortunately, I don't know it's there. So again, I don't want to make it feel like I'm ignoring anything because I'm not. I truly love answering these questions and I'm very thankful for everybody who contributes here every single week to our mailbag. We have a bunch of questions to get into and it's not as much in terms of quantity, but the questions are still very, very good. So let's get into all of that right now. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. We're there waiting Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern time. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34 for any Ravens news, analysis, updates, injury reports, historical perspectives, and more. So with all that being said, let's jump right in here, starting off with the Ravens injury report. And as I alluded to earlier, this Ravens team right now, it is healthy. Again, kind of a weird thing to think about the Ravens and the word healthy in the same sentence, but here we are. The Ravens, just three players on the injury report for Tuesday: Matthew Judon, Marcus Peters, and DJ Fluker. Matthew Judon did not participate with an illness, and the word illness in today's world with the coronavirus pandemic, it's a scary word, but usually when the Ravens have guys out with the coronavirus or potential safety reasons due to the virus, they'll put not injury related on there. So no, I don't think Matthew Judon is, you know, a threat to go on the coronavirus list or have anything to do with that right now. I mean, maybe it is, but I wouldn't read too much into that at all. Marcus Peters with his back injury did not participate. This is really the only, I guess, kind of concerning one. Peters was not on the injury report with this injury last week, which pretty much means that he got injured in the game against Tennessee, or at least that's what I'm assuming. It doesn't seem like it'll be enough to keep him out of the divisional round, and even if it might have been a little bit more serious than I think it is, I don't think Marcus Peters will be sitting on the sideline. He is too much of a competitor. But this is something where the injury reports leading up to the game will give us a little more clarity, kind of like with DJ Fluker last week with his knee injury, didn't participate for a few days, comes back with a limited participation, and then he's able to suit up and play on Sunday. So with Marcus Peters, I'd expect probably a limited participation in practice today. If he doesn't participate again today, I'd get a little more concerned. But then on the Thursday injury report, if he's limited, he'll probably play. If he doesn't participate all week, that does not bode well for his status. So kind of something to watch with Marcus Peters. I wouldn't overreact to it at all. I just think that this is something he probably picked up in that game against Tennessee, and it'll be something to monitor throughout the week. And then finally, DJ Fluker, who I talked about just a few seconds ago, with his knee injury, he was a limited participant. This is something I wouldn't be too worried about if I were the Ravens. He was able to play after two did not participate in one limited participation. So I think now, you know, limited participant, it looks like he's on the right trend here. So for the Ravens, just three guys on their injury report, which actually is really nice for them. You know, I'm old enough to remember the days when the Ravens had 20 guys on the COVID list, and the Ravens had all of these different people on injured reserve, and guys were missing multiple weeks, and guys were banged up day to day, and Tavon Young and Ronnie Stanley and Nick Boyle all done for the season. Some of those guys aren't coming back. The guys who were out for the year aren't coming back, but the Ravens have certainly gotten healthier. It's really helped them in terms of getting in a groove. Guys playing with the same guys, veterans coming back and being able to stabilize and shore up some positions. It really helps to have those type of guys just ready and available and willing to play, and it really helps when they're high-level players on this team, really important cogs and pieces. That's the key for this Ravens team, and they are certainly healthy at the moment. Again, not getting back the guys on injured reserve who were done for the year, but they are certainly in a much better position health-wise than they were a few weeks ago. And for the Bills, their injury report is a bit longer, but it doesn't seem like anyone is severely in danger of missing the game. For the Bills, Zach Moss is probably done for the playoffs, the rookie running back for Buffalo, who's had an up-and-down season for them. He hasn't been overly impressive. But for the Bills injury report here, Cole Beasley with a knee injury, he was limited. Stephon Diggs with an oblique, he was limited. Tremaine Edmonds with a hamstring, limited. Jake Fromm, not injury related, he was limited. Daryl Johnston with a knee injury, he did not participate. Ed Oliver with an ankle injury, he was limited. And Justin Zimmer with a groin, he was limited. So the only person who did not participate was Daryl Johnston. Not necessarily a huge loss for them if he does not play, but something to watch here is Cole Beasley with his knee injury. He was limited. He is pretty much working with one leg right now. But again, this is the playoffs. Guys are going to play through pain. Guys are going to play through injuries. But Cole Beasley pretty much ran one route the entire game against the Colts on Saturday. So he might be less of a factor than he would be at 100%. He clearly, if this was the regular season, he probably would have been out for Indianapolis. He could have even been out for this week against Baltimore. But for these Bills, they certainly have a longer injury report than the Ravens, but it doesn't seem like any key contributors who aren't already out with injury are going to be missing this game. It doesn't seem like anyone who's been limited is going to miss this game for either side, or even guys who did not participate. Both teams will most likely be at full strength for this game. And then talking a bit about some Ravens transactions here before we head into our first break. They signed two veteran offensive linemen to their practice squad, an offensive tackle Jordan Mills and center Greg Mance. Mills is an 8-year veteran. He started 84 games. He played for Buffalo and played for Dallas. And he was a 5th-round pick of the Bears out of Louisiana Tech. And for Mance, he spent his entire career with Houston. He started 16 games at center in 2016 and played some right guard in 2017. Also played for the Texans this season before being waived on January 7th. And we've seen this rule a couple times here where for the playoffs, guys who were on practice squads with the COVID rule for practice squads, if they're on another team, teams in the playoffs right now can sign guys off of practice squads to play. They can sign to other practice squads if they were waived. So guys are getting signs left and right here. They're getting waived. An example of this is Gerald Veld here, who played for the Indianapolis Colts. He played tackle for the Indianapolis Colts against the Bills. The Colts get eliminated. So he gets signed by the Packers to their active roster because he was on the practice squad. So he went from the active roster back down to the practice squad. He reverted. And then the Packers signed him to their active roster. So he is going to play in the divisional round for the Packers. He played for the Colts in the wildcard round. Now he's playing for the Packers in the divisional round. Just stuff that's unprecedented. But the Ravens go and they sign two offensive linemen for depth. They released defensive tackle Braxton Hoyett from the practice squad and placed Parker Einger on the practice squad injured list. They also designated cornerback Devontae Harris from injured reserve to return. They designated him to return from injured reserve. So a bunch of moving parts here for Baltimore, shoring up on depth. Hopefully they're getting healthy at the right time here. It's pretty obvious they are. And for the Ravens, they have a big matchup coming up on Saturday, and they are healthy at just the right time. We're going to head into our first break now, and when we return, we'll be talking about some mailbag questions here, getting into comments, questions, concerns, and other things relating to the Baltimore Ravens. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. You're unique and so are your taxes. TurboTax Live has experienced tax experts who listen to you, learn about your unique tax situations, and answer your questions. And on top of that, they do your taxes from start to finish. Maybe you're investing and want some reassurance from an expert that you're doing things right. Maybe you're now self-employed and need some expert advice on what qualifies as a home office deduction. Or maybe you'd rather have an expert file your taxes for you so you can focus on what matters most. No matter what your situation is, TurboTax Live tax experts can answer your questions, give tax advice, review your return before you file, or even do it all for you. TurboTax Live gives you confidence that your uniquely you taxes are done right. Intuit TurboTax Live. File with the help of an expert or let an expert file for you. And we return here with our second segment of this midweek edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with you here. And let's now dive into some mailbag questions. We're going to start off talking about the Titans game. We're going to look into some questions and comments about the Titans. And then we're going to move into, in our final segment, talking a bit about the Bills and that game. So we'll start off here with, according to Elias, who asked, "The Titans seem to love crowding the box with defensive backs. The Titans and Chargers used the same approach to beat Lamar and the Ravens the previous 2 years. Why didn't it work this time?" And this is something that I think is a huge difference between the game against the Chargers 2 years ago, against the Titans last year. The Ravens made adjustments. I give a huge credit to the coaching staff on both offense and defense. Greg Roman, Don Martindale, but talking specifically about the offense, early in the game, the Ravens' run offense was stifled by Tennessee. I talked about it a couple days ago. Tennessee was crashing in on the edges. They were setting the edge as well. They weren't letting Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins get to the outside. They were forcing them to drive into the teeth of that defense with the football, and it was working at first. J.K. Dobbins couldn't get a ton going. Gus Edwards couldn't get a ton going. It also seemed like the design runs to Lamar Jackson really didn't work all day, and there were a couple here or there that did get yards and did end up working, but at the end of the day, Lamar Jackson, that touchdown was not a designed run for him. The play at the end of the game, for example, where he stays in bounds, points at Kevin Byer, pretty much ices the game away, that was a designed run. But the Ravens, they adjusted. The Titans were selling out to stop the run at first. They weren't defending the flats. So what do the Ravens do? They start to hit Patrick Ricard in the flat. They start to hit Mark Andrews in the flat. They start working the outside of the field. Tennessee's defense, it was pretty bunched up at first, because you're right, Elias, Tennessee went out and ended up stacking the box, or at least crowding the box with those defensive backs, trying to almost just cage in Lamar Jackson and make him beat them with his arm, which to an extent, he really did it, but it was a joint effort between the pass game and the run game in the end. So what I like to see was the Ravens spread out that Titans defense. They were able to make sure that, hey, we're going to take what the defense gives us here so that we can open up the rest of our offense. That's why Marquise Brown was so effective. They were giving Marquise Brown some of those catches. They said, all right, we are going to force Lamar Jackson to beat us with his arm. And then once he actually started doing it, once he started hitting those underneath throws, once Patrick Ricard was getting 11 yards, sometimes 7 yards, right? Those were big, almost like, all right, we can't keep giving them that or else they're going to march down the field on us in 10 plays. They're going to bleed clock and they're going to score. So they had to start respecting the Ravens in that short intermediate pass game. That allowed them to open up the field a little more, where you saw a couple of big completions to Marquise Brown and you saw a couple of other big completions as well. But the Titans also keyed in on Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews was not really a factor in this one outside of his huge catch at the end of the first quarter that really turned the tides in this game. 4 receptions for 41 yards. So it wasn't like Andrews was completely just stifled away by the Titans, but Marquise Brown, 7 for 109, Ricard, 3 for 26, Sneed, 2 for 9. So it wasn't like the Ravens just threw the ball all over the Titans. But what I've said all season is the Ravens' run game goes hand-in-hand with the pass game, and the pass game goes hand-in-hand with the run game. Once the Ravens started to expose those flat routes and expose the short game, the Titans had to respect it because Baltimore started moving the football on a couple plays, and that was what was able to get Lamar Jackson and this Baltimore run offense going. And for Baltimore, that's what makes their offense so dangerous anyway. The adjustments Greg Roman made, if you go back to 2 years ago, or even I think last year is a better example of it, Baltimore just starts trying to throw the ball deep. They try to throw all these other plays. They keep trying to run the ball to an extent, but then they just stop. It was an overall mess of a game plan for Greg Roman. I'm sure if you asked him, he would have probably mixed things to say about it. He probably wouldn't admit everything he wanted to say, but I'm sure that he would think that, yeah, we didn't really make the necessary adjustments at halftime. The Ravens, at the end of that first quarter, they made the necessary adjustments. The offensive line also started to play better. That was another key factor. Again, my key saying here is that, look, no matter how good your quarterback is, how good your running back is, how good your receivers are, tight ends, whatever, on the offensive side of the ball, if we stick to the run game at least, if your quarterback and running back aren't finished with the exchange, and a linebacker or a defensive end or a defensive tackle is in the backfield just waiting for that exchange to finish and is right there to tackle the ball carrier, no offense is going to succeed like that. The offensive line, they had some trouble at first. Tyree Phillips had a couple bad plays, Ben Powers on a couple of bad plays, but they responded really well and they played a lot better as the game wore on, and that's what opened up the offense as well. Lamar Jackson had more time to throw. 4 first half sacks for Lamar Jackson, only 1 in the second half. So it was a joint effort, but for Baltimore, their ability to spread Tennessee's defense out to take advantage of the flat short game, that is what helped Baltimore, and that is why crowding the box didn't work, because Tennessee had to respect that, and they had to keep it in the back of their minds. Even if they were crowding the box still late in the game, they had to keep in mind that, oh man, look, if we oversell this, they're going to play action and just absolutely kill us with a short gain that if we were out there, maybe it would go for 2-3 yards, but if we're just selling out to stop the run and crowding the box and trying to cage in Lamar Jackson, it could go for 10, 15, 20 yards. So the Ravens did a really nice job in that regard. Next, we have a question from Menachem Gerstmann, who asks, what happened at the end of the first half? Why no timeout after Hollywood catches at midfield? What's with the next play, a backward pass to J.K. Dobbins? Against the Bills, we will need every point. Yeah, the end of the first half for Baltimore, really throughout the entire season, and even dating back to 2019 as well, either something really, really good happens or something really, really bad happens. The Ravens had an opportunity to go up by a touchdown or at least even a field goal at the end of the half. The game was tied 10-10. Tennessee scores the first 10 points. Baltimore scores the next 10. So the Ravens have a prime opportunity to add points to the board before half while also getting the football back to start the second half. This drive at the end of the first half, yeah, it wasn't great. And Lamar Jackson, I think I'm going to put most of the blame here on him, because they certainly did have an opportunity to go and put points up on the board. They start at their own 31. Lamar Jackson has an incomplete pass to Dez Bryant where he slips on the turf. So the clock stops with a minute 41 left. There's nothing really to look at there. Then Lamar Jackson is sacked for no yards. They put it in as a sack. It's pretty much just a no game play. So on 3rd and 10, Lamar Jackson throws to Marquise Brown short, again, spreading that Tennessee defense out. Adoree Jackson misses a tackle. Brown goes up the sideline for 19 yards to the 50-yard line. So it's 1st and 10, and here is that play. It's really the sequence here that isn't great. So Lamar Jackson passes it to J.K. Dobbins for negative 6 yards. It was a play where Lamar Jackson goes through his reads, can't find anyone, the pressure's coming, and he just throws it backwards to J.K. Dobbins. And for Dobbins, this was a rookie mistake for him. Dobbins, if it wasn't a clear backward pass, which I can't remember exactly if it was or not, but if it was, he made the right play by catching it, because if he doesn't, it's a fumble, and Tennessee can recover, they can pick it up and score. But if it was a forward pass to Dobbins, and again, I just can't remember the actual trajectory of the ball, Dobbins makes the wrong decision by catching it and should have just swatted it down. Now, in Dobbins' defense, it's a really hard play in real time to understand, because you can't really tell if the ball is going backwards, and if you're a receiver, only in like really, really specific situations are you supposed to not catch the football and let it drop. So for Dobbins, at the end of the day, he made the right play for a receiver, but Lamar Jackson just needs to throw that ball away. He just can't throw it to Dobbins when he sees guys all around him. it's not the right play. So Dobbins, he gets tackled for negative 6 yards. And the worst part about it is the clock keeps moving. So we're at 35 seconds. The clock gets down to 29 seconds, and Baltimore calls their second timeout. On the next play, second and 16, the Baltimore 44. You can get a couple yards back, hopefully on second down, and make it a reasonable third down. So what does Lamar Jackson do? He holds the ball for like 10 seconds and is sacked for 8 yards. He holds the ball, and there's that clock. There's that clock that goes off in your head as a quarterback, and that's where you have to throw it away, especially in a two-minute drill before the end of the half. You're close to midfield. You cannot take a sack in that situation. It kills you. It kills momentum. And for Baltimore, that's exactly what Jackson did. I mean, the Ravens... it killed that drive. Those two plays, it killed that drive. They have the 19-yard pass to Hollywood Brown, and on the 3rd and 24, J.K. Dobbins, they just handed off at the Baltimore 36. Then there's the penalty on Dez Bryant. So it makes it 4th and 31, and then there's a defensive holding call prior to the kick, which actually means that Baltimore gets a first down out of all of it, and it doesn't matter. It's at the Baltimore 34. Lamar Jackson just kneels it. It was just a wild sequence, and those are the types of plays, Menachem, you're right about capitalizing every single point against the Bills, and especially late in the game when Justin Tucker misses that field goal, you kind of go back and you think, oh man, what if Baltimore is able to score 3 points on that drive? What if Lamar Jackson doesn't take that sack? You know, there's a lot of what ifs in this game, but for the Ravens, it was difficult because with that sequence, with that couple of plays that Lamar Jackson had, that and the interception, those two plays and the interception were the two worst plays I think Lamar Jackson had all day. So credit for him for, you know, stepping up in the second half. But for the Ravens, those types of drives at the end of halves have been really good to Baltimore, such as, you know, scoring twice in the final 2 minutes against Cleveland in week 16 last year, or really bad like this, or like turnovers at the end of halves to give teams a chance to score points of their own. So for Baltimore, a pretty bad end of half drive, but they were able to win the game, and hopefully against Buffalo, if they are in that situation again, it will be performed better. We're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be talking about some more mailbag questions, comments, concerns, and anything else here, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. The NFL regular season is finished and the playoffs have begun. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we return here with our final segment of this midweek edition of Locked On Ravens. Your host, Kevin Ostreicher, still talking with you here. And we're going to get into the final questions, comments, and anything else relating to Baltimore here in this final segment. So we'll start off with a couple of nice questions from Brendan Ward. Brendan had two questions, and they are both good ones. So we'll start off with his first question, which is, the Bills seem to have trouble defending tight end routes up the seam. Is this where you see the Ravens primarily attacking, or will they try to run the ball against a shaky Buffalo front? This is something where I think Baltimore just has to stay true to who they are, but as I've been preaching, the run game goes hand-in-hand with the pass game, and the pass game goes hand-in-hand with the run game. I'm sure some people are tired of hearing it by now, but it's just the truth. So what I would expect Baltimore to do first is definitely establish their will on the ground. The Ravens struggled, especially in the first half, to run the ball against Tennessee, but good for Greg Roman, good for this Ravens offense. They kept at it. They kept wearing down the Tennessee front. And I would rather have Tennessee's front if I'm a defense. I'd rather have Tennessee's front than Buffalo. That is a good sign for Baltimore because you're right, Buffalo's front is a bit shaky. Now, admittedly, the whole Buffalo defense is playing a lot better than they were earlier in the year. There were a lot of injuries. They were trying to figure out what rotations were with departures, with key pieces, with retirements and COVID opt-outs and free agent losses. But I do think the Ravens will try to run the ball first, and I think that they're going to continue to do that throughout the entire game. But when it does come to the pass game, the Bills, yes, they have had trouble defending tight ends, especially up the seam, as you mentioned. So I would expect the Bills to hone in on Mark Andrews, to try to take Mark Andrews away, much like the Titans did. So what does that mean? That means Marquise Brown is going to have to fill in and come out and be playoff Hollywood Brown. That is a big reality, is that Marquise Brown has to show up in these games. And you know, with Mark Andrews being taken away, especially earlier in the season, that's always a game plan for a defense. But we saw Nick Boyle's ascension as a receiver, and that really helped almost take the pressure off of Andrews in two tight end looks. You don't really see Eric Tomlinson on the field running routes super often. Usually when Tomlinson's in the game, it's because Baltimore's running the football, and Tomlinson's a pretty good blocker. He has proved that, you know, the Ravens trust him, and they trust him more than Logan Wilson, who they ended up cutting because he just was not getting the job done. And Baltimore has felt really confident with him, with Ricard, with putting Matt Skura in there as the extra offensive lineman, that those sets work. But you're not seeing the Ravens run routes with those two tight end sets a lot anymore. Nick Boyle, he's a huge loss and a really underrated loss in the passing game. So I think the Bills are going to game plan to take away Mark Andrews. And what that means is even more opportunities for guys like Patrick Ricard, for guys like Marquise Brown. Maybe Miles Boykin gets in on the action. Willie Snead, he had 2 catches for 9 yards against Tennessee. I think a big spot coming up for him is this game against Buffalo, because with Andrews, Snead and Andrews operate almost in the same part of the field on some plays, and I think you're really expecting a guy like Snead to be that third down converter, someone who can come up, make clutch catches. But again, Baltimore needs to take what the defense gives them. They should not be forcing the ball down the field when things are not there. They should not be taking short stuff when short stuff is not there. Take what the defense is giving you, react to the looks they're giving you. They did a phenomenal job at it in Tennessee on Sunday. Now they have to carry that over to Saturday, make the adjustments necessary, and hope that the Bills continue to struggle defending tight ends. But if they do take away Andrews, Marquise Brown showed and other weapons showed that they have the weapons to combat that. Our second question from Brendan is, do you think Wink will have Marlin shadowing Diggs or mix up the coverages? This is a good question, Brendan, just because the Ravens, I think they have options here. They could do a lot. Do I think someone will shadow Stephon Diggs? It would make sense if the Ravens were to play the matchup game. Now, looking at the matchup game, the Bills are arguably 5 deep at wide receivers. Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley, Isaiah McKenzie, and Gabriel Davis. 5 really great receivers, not to mention Andre Roberts, who's another receiver on that team, is a Pro Bowl returner. So they are very stacked at the wide receiver position. Now, luckily for Baltimore, the Ravens are stacked at the cornerback position. What the Ravens might see on Saturday are pretty much 4 wide looks. That aren't really used a ton in today's NFL, but teams that have the depth like the Bills, they can rely on those, they can spread a defense out, and that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to pass the ball. If the Bills are using 4 wide receiver sets, they can do play action, they can run draw plays off of that, RPOs off of that. But if that is the case, I'd probably put Marlon Humphrey on Stephon Diggs and I'd have him shadow him. I'd put Marcus Peters on John Brown. I don't know who I'd play in the slot. It's difficult because if you look at it, the Ravens formations, they're playing Marlon Humphrey in the slot. They're putting Peters on the outside and Jimmy Smith on the outside. So from a pure matchup perspective, I'll stick with it. I'll put Marlon Humphrey on Stephon Diggs, Marcus Peters on John Brown. But then it becomes difficult because Cole Beasley is in the slot. And Marlon Humphrey just matches up so well with Stephon Diggs that it's almost crazy not to think about putting him on there. But Humphrey is the guy with the most experience in the slot for the Ravens, unless you want to trot out Tremont Williams or if you want to give Anthony Averett a shot in the slot, which Averett's been a phenomenal outside corner, but can he do it in the slot? So what I would personally do is shadow Humphrey on Diggs. I'd put Peters on John Brown. I'd probably give Averett a shot in the slot, see what he can do, and if it doesn't work early, I'd transition and put Jimmy Smith on Stephon Diggs and try that out. Maybe put Peters on there, see if you can switch up the two on him, and then put Humphrey in the slot against Cole Beasley. And then you can use Jimmy Smith in a role that suits him in that, you know, safety, dime linebacker-esque matchup role, maybe on Dawson Knox or somebody like that. But what I expect Baltimore to do is probably put Jimmy Smith and Marcus Peters on the outside and Marlon Humphrey in the slot. I mean, that's probably what they're going to end up doing. And it's really because Tavon Young going down really hurt this team. It really hurt their depth. Tavon Young, the Ravens pretty much told him, you're going to have to take a pay cut or we're going to cut you because we cannot rely on your health anymore. And that was the right call. And it's sad for Tavon Young. I hate that that's been the case with him. 3 season-ending injuries in 5 years. But it's just what's been happening with him. It's unfortunate that he's had to go down. But I do think the Ravens are going to end up putting Marlon Humphrey in the slot and seeing what happens. And that doesn't mean Marlon Humphrey's going to be on Cole Beasley all day. But I think we'll see some Marcus Peters on Stephon Diggs snaps. We'll see some Jimmy Smith on Stephon Diggs snaps potentially. And then, of course, we'll see Marlon Humphrey on Stephon Diggs. We'll see what ends up happening, but that's what I'd expect, really. But Humphrey should shadow Diggs for most of this game, but with the personnel Baltimore has, I just don't think it makes sense for him to do so, and I don't think Don Martindale is going to do that either. Our final question here does not relate to the playoffs, but it does relate to Baltimore's offseason, and it's a question I got from Ben, and Ben sent me a long message. It was a really nice long message about how he doesn't feel like the Ravens have had a truly dominant defense since 2018 with the pass rush of Za'Darius Smith and Terrell Suggs and Matthew Judon. And so he asks if there was anything that the Ravens could do to make the defense get back to that top five level, assuming the Ravens do make a move like signing or drafting a wide receiver or offensive lineman or both. And so, Ben, this is a difficult question because there's so much uncertainty right now. Who are the Ravens going to cut? Who are the Ravens going to bring back? Who are the Ravens going to sign? But despite all that, the Ravens do have a couple of things to address. Do they go out and do they end up re-signing Yannick Ngakoue or Matthew Judon or Tyus Bowser? The only outside linebacker under contract in Baltimore next season is Jalen Ferguson. Ngakoue, Judon, Bowser, and Ward are all free agents. So for the Ravens, they have some decisions to make there. Someone who I'd love to see in Baltimore, I'd love to see Justin Houston in Baltimore. I think he would provide a dynamic. You can get him on a one-year deal, I'd assume. Probably around $7, $8, $9 million. I think that'd be a phenomenal signing for them. I think Baltimore will also look into drafting an outside linebacker. The secondary is what the secondary is. I think Baltimore is also going to consider bringing in a safety. I think that Deshaun Elliott is a phenomenal player, but I think they might want to use him in kind of a hybrid role where it's not like he's not going to see the field, but if you can get a true back-end ball-hawking free safety to pair with Chuck Clark and put Deshaun Elliott on the field in kind of the role that Baltimore envisioned Jimmy Smith in earlier in the season, I think using three safeties on the field, that's phenomenal for Baltimore. It gives each player a chance to succeed, and Elliott has learned on the fly to play free safety. He was a strong safety by trade, and I'm proud of what he's been able to do this season, but I think drafting or signing a safety would be really nice, especially, you know, someone with Earl Thomas ball hawking skills. Elliott is a ball hawk. He's just learning on the fly right now, and so if Baltimore wants to have that stud safety, you know, I think Deshaun Elliott is going to be a phenomenal player, but using him in that role and developing him more would be great if you could use him in that Jimmy Smith type role. So there's a lot that Baltimore could do here, Ben. There's a lot, but I do understand that, you know, they're in a tough situation with cap. They're going to have to sign a bunch of guys in a couple years. They've already signed Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley to long-term deals. So money will be coming off the books. They'll also have to look at interior defensive line because Calais Campbell, Brandon Williams, Derek Wolfe, all over 30 years old. So there are a couple things they can do. But for right now, there's a lot of uncertainty. But I'm sure Baltimore and Eric DaCosta will do a phenomenal job again this offseason. That's all that I have for you today on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, it is Crossover Thursday with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.